Welcome to Help from Future Self.
Hey, what's going on, Archons? Welcome to another episode of Help from Future Self, the conversational KeyForge podcast by and for KeyForge friends. My name is Blake, and I am your host today, and I am joined, of course, by the illustrious Essie Steele. What's going on, Sydney?
Everything's going on. There's so much going on. I'm really, really happy that there's so much going on.
Yeah, seriously, that is not a untruthful statement. And I just first want to say thank you so much for holding it down while I was away. Those were some great episodes having Z and Philly on. I really, really enjoyed them. They were great. I understand, though, that something happened after having Philly on, which has created a bit of a stir in our Discord, and people are not understanding some of the lingo, which means why aren't they listening to our episode, I guess, is the first place. If they're in our Discord, why aren't they listening to the show? So why don't you clarify what happened, Sydney?
So basically, on our Discord, and then some other people have personally reached out to ask what it means, because both Philly and I referenced to get punked. And because obviously that has some connotations if spelled P-U-N-K-E-D. But what we were talking about was the card punctuated equilibrium. So the first couple letters are P-U-N-C-T. So I just kept calling it get punked because that way you're discarding your whole hand. It was really painful. It's actually something that a strategy that I've used in my deck before. So when we talk about getting punked, if you didn't understand last time, this is what we meant.
Yes, someone used a punctuated equilibrium against you. It is one of the greatest things to come out of the Help from Future Self podcast is that phrase. I fully support this message.
Love it.
So aside from that, we had a lot of news drop. Just as we're recording, there was the wonderful announcement of what World Championships is also going to be, which is another KeyForge celebration, or KFC. They have fully acknowledged that it is called KFC now. That is a thing. That is not Kentucky Fried Chicken. That is not Korean Fried Chicken. It is KeyForge celebration. So that is,
oh my gosh,
that is exactly what is happening. There's all the details in the article. Sydney, what are you most excited about in that article?
I am most excited about the last chance qualifier. So I shouldn't be, because obviously I'm going to get my invite some other way before then. But, you know, if I don't, the last chance qualifier to get into the World Championships at KFC are going to be a sealed alliance event. So it's going to be not only a format that I love, but it's also going to be a chance to get an invite to play in the World's Championship that weekend. So a lot of that just makes a lot of sense to me.
I also like that concept as well, because they didn't put a number of what it is. So basically what it is each event is going to have 32 people. So they've made it that if for some reason someone can't come, if other things happen where I guess someone keeps, there's the top eight have all won, so therefore they cannot give the invite to someone else, that they will just use, I guess, the top rankings of that tournament will just fill out the tournament itself. So I think that's a really awesome way of doing this World Championship. You get a chance to show up. And even if you don't make it into the last chance qualifier, there's still a lot going on. And this is the next thing. The two things I'm actually most excited about is the fact that, let's say you go for a last chance. You're like, you know what? I'm doing it, I'm getting in, and it doesn't happen. Guess what? You get to play the next day in a tournament where you can qualify for next year's World Championship. I think that's very well thought out, because that means people who are coming for that goal still have a chance to achieve it, but at a future date. So I think that's really well done.
I love that idea. I love the fact that not only are they making it something that we can all go to because we have something to win that weekend, but they're making it something we can all go to because we want to be there all weekend. So even if you don't make it for the World Championships this year, they have jam-packed list of things to do for Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, including something called the Menagerie, which I'm just gonna go out on a limb here, and I have a feeling you get to play the new set that's about to come out, because they literally said they're going to give details during the Game Found campaign. So I have a feeling that that's going to be a big part of it. So that's going to be exciting, and definitely going to want to make people go and play. And I think people who are playing in Worlds at the same time are going to be a little bit, oh, I can't play in the Menagerie because I'm in the tournament, don't get the new decks. So
right?
I think that's going to be really interesting, but it'll be another case where everyone gets their hands on a product that they literally cannot play except for in person. But
I think
it's going to be a lot of fun. I think KFC as a preview tournament to a new set being a new thing, I kind of like that idea. I think it's really interesting.
they set the bar so high last year with how absolutely amazing KFC was that they need to repeat that. And it sounds like they have the roadmap to do it again.
Yes. Now, the other thing that was announced was there was a rulebook update. That one, I think we won't get into too much detail. You should just go read the article. There's no point us paraphrasing anything on there. Go take a look. It's very transparent in the article itself. They state some things very clearly. And then they also have the link to the new version to peruse more thoroughly if you so desire to be up on all things rule-related and KeyForge.
The last thing that I want to say that they talked about is they listed the national championships in 2023. And it's just really exciting that they have all of these different places, but they have them on a pedestal. Like, it's not just hearsay that we're talking about on Discords, but they list out all the different locations. And it's really exciting to be like, this is how the international community is showcasing their love for KeyForge. Every single one of these locations is having a national championship competition to join us at Worlds. Like, it's so exciting.
Yeah, and the attendance is anywhere from 30 to 128, I believe, is the range that it shows on there.
Right? Isn't that insane? Like, the fact that there's so many people coming.
A lot of European countries, which is awesome. I think Europe has definitely been overlooked a little bit, and it shouldn't be, because there is a huge width of countries that can play the game and demonstrate it. So hopefully this first game found does not sour them, and next year they'll get to see how it's done right and get to really enjoy the game at the proper level. I mean, we all know this is basically year one for Ghost Galaxy. So everything theoretically should only get better from here. Infrastructures are in place, systems, all that stuff that will make next year and the second phase of KeyForge under GG so much more streamlined and perfected. So please don't hate because there was a delay. I think it is only because it's year one. Growing pains, right?
And last but not least, congratulations to the winners of the Vault Tours this weekend. So not only, as you hear, this has Dallas completed, but Shanghai is also completed its Vault Tour. So there were two Vault Tours this weekend, and congratulations to all the winners.
So without further ado, Sydney, let's get into our topic. So why don't you outline what we're going to be doing today?
So I think that we've just had so much time with WoW at this point to change our initial reactions. Speaking of, like, I had my hands on WoW since KFC, and you basically had it as soon as I was able to send you something from that event. So we had initial reactions that had us lurking for specific combinations and wanting us to find specific things. And now that we've had our hands on it for so long, like, we've been able to experiment and explore, and whether playing Archon or Alliance, there are still some chase combos that are really important and really cool if you get them. So I thought we could chat again about what some of these chase combos are.
100%, yes. So we're I don't think there's going to be really any order. We can just go one for one, Sydney, and state what house we're going into when we say it, and then we'll just go from there. Does that make sense for you?
Love it. Sounds great.
Okay, perfect. Do you want me to kick it off?
Yep, you got this.
All right, so first one, I'm actually going to go to House Mars to kick things off, because as you said, I started playing as soon as I was able to get my hands on some stuff from you. And in my very first deck I got, which is one of my most played WoW decks, and I absolutely love this deck, is a Mars house that happened to have Memrox the Red, which I love this card. It's one of my favorite cards for a lot of reasons, but mainly because there's a card called Scoop Up. So both these cards read, Memrox is a 5-power Martian creature that says your opponent's cards cannot leave your archives. Then it has an action ability, gain one for each card in your archives. So I love this card for just that your cards can't, because there's a lot of things your opponent's cards can't leave your archives, just for the fact that there's a few things in this set that can have you put stuff into your archives that your opponent has. And I love this. Like, it's fun for Sealed Alliance, because you can get some important Infernuses, Igors, Helper Bots, all those creatures that can do damage, Edis, and you can take them off your opponent's board and not able to recur in any way. So I really love it for that. But when you pair Scoop Up with it, which is an action card that states, put a friendly non-Mars creature and an enemy non-Mars creature into your archives. If that enemy creature would leave your archives, return it to your owner's hand instead. So you basically put two creatures in there, and now if you have multiple scoop ups, you could essentially get up to like four cards, six cards, anything like that in there. And that means you're using Memrox and gaining anywhere from two to four Ember, depending on how you end up playing that. And if you choose to pull your own cards back, let's say you chose a token creature that had a valuable target underneath that you need, you still get that back without relinquishing your opponent's cards that you took. So I think it's such a fun thing. And Memrox is, honestly, it's an uncommon, and I just think it's a great card, great art. What do you think of that, Sydney?
That's fantastic. Yeah, that's something that I haven't actually been able to play with yet, but it sounds like it would work beautifully.
Oh yeah, I had early exposure to it and I absolutely loved it. And then if you really want to have a cherry on top, you can get Irenix Rebel, which is a Martian Irenix that's two power. It has deploy and it says play ready each of Irenix Rebel's Mars neighbor. So you could literally play scoop up, then ready Memrox and get instant value on that right away. So that is my really fave combo. It's this three card combo, but either way, it still has a lot of value for me, and I really enjoy playing it.
Totally. That's a fantastic transition into my Mars combo, because Irenix Rebel is like the cherry on top for mine too. But my two card combo in Mars is, if you have the action Psychic Network and it says steal one for each friendly ready Mars creature. But there's also an artifact called Compod, and that one says, action, reveal any number of Mars cards from your hand. For each card revealed this way, you may ready a Mars creature. I have a deck with Psychic Network and Compod in it, and it's absolutely crazy how each of my Mars turns, I'm stealing Amber, because I am able to get through my deck so quickly because of all of the draw pips, but there's also some other supporting artifacts that let me make extra tokens, and I'm getting through my deck so quickly that I'm getting Psychic Network back into my hand over and over and over again. And if you have Irenix Rebel, which you just pointed out, readies creatures once played, you also are stealing more. So it's a fantastic combination of stealing Amber as well as using creatures. So readying your creatures, you don't have to have them ready on the board. That also means you can play them from your hand. Some combination of how many cards do I need to hold back? If I'm using Compod to ready the creatures that are on the board, I can play two creatures if I have two other Mars cards. And then it's a fantastic combination, because Psychic Network as a card in your hand works to ready a creature on the board.
Amazing. Just win more, basically.
Absolutely.
I love that. Next up for me, I'm going to go on over to the Equidon, the Compact Merchants of Equidon. And this one, I really like this combo. It's a little bit more involved, but I think it has a lot of really fun stuff. And it's the action called Exchange Program. So it says choose a friendly flank creature and an enemy flank creature. If you do, swap control of those creatures. The reason I like this one here is you get an Ember Pip as well. Is there's a couple things that are really nice with it. First off, you have the chance to use the card called Shrewd Investor. So it says, Shrewd Investor says you may have an opponent gain one if you do capture four. So essentially, if you have that combo, you can have one of your creatures and then just swap them right away, which means your opponent now has that four Ember on that. So I really like that. And then as well, there's another one that you can partner with that, which is Trading Frenzy, which is an action that says a friendly creature and enemy creature each capture three from their opponent. So you're now in control of that Ember going back to your opponent with that card. I just think it's a really fun combination of utilizing this capture ability and then not having to keep that Ember on your side of the board.
That's fantastic. Absolutely. A lot of what Equidon does is to give things to both of your opponents. So if you can have a set of cards that makes it so that you are capitalizing on that and your opponent can't, it's a fantastic payoff.
Mm-hmm, indeed. What do you got for us, Sydney?
Absolutely. So I actually have a weird kind of, not really combo, but sort of like a luck-based draw in your deck. So there's an artifact called Puzzling Trinket, and it enhances to Amber, but it reads, when you resolve an Amber bonus icon, you may choose to resolve it as a capture, a damage, or a draw icon instead. And as insane as that is, if you think about it, Equidon also in its house has Cursed Relic, the the artifact that enhances 6 amber, and the creature Steward Su Uzain, who enhances 2 amber and a draw pip. So if you get Puzzling Trinket and multiple Steward Su Uzains or a cursed relic, what you're doing is you are throwing so many options into your deck, because every one of those amber pips can be a ton of other options. If you need to draw 3 cards, because if you think about it, a lot of cards already come with amber pips on them. So normal amber on a card can be a draw, a capture. It's crazy awesome. Like, it's just, Puzzling Trinket is amazing by itself, but if you bring with it additional enhancements, it's crazy.
I completely agree. That was on my list as well. It literally was just by itself as well. Exactly same as you.
Right.
But I agree. I think the, so the Steward, I pronounce it differently because there's the accent on the, I call it. Steward Su Uzain.
Ooh, I like it.
A little more exotic, you know? So I actually feel the same way. And I have to give a shout out to June, one of our most recent guests, because when she was on KPR with Zach, she was talking about how Puzzling Trinket has a very high learning curve. And it just so happened I had been testing a deck that had a Puzzling Trinket. And it was really interesting, because to decide to not gain an ember and do something else is a very big decision that I think is not one that you can make lightly or easily, because there's a cost benefit, which is the entire thing of Equidon. So it's very well designed. But for example, you have getting a draw pip, so digging for something. The ember, if you need to get your opponent off key in order to survive another turn, and you have a card you know you can get, then a draw pip is more valuable than ember, because ember is not going to get you that card you need. And
absolutely.
Then if you keep going, like let's say you're getting ember, and that one ember is going to put you at 7 ember, let's say, or 8 ember, but someone has a
Rant and Rive
card out named Edai. And Edai now has your keys up really high, but you have 2 damage on your Edai, or you have 1 damage on the Edai from another card. Guess what? Now you can use that ember as damage pips, and you now take out the Edai. So now that 12, let's say it was a 12 cost ember or 9 or whatever happened to be, now allows that ember you currently have to be valid, to be in check, rather than just going higher. So I think there's really interesting decisions with Puzzling Trinket, and any Puzzling Trinket deck, you will never truly understand, I think, the full extent of what you can do or when you should do it, unless you've played like June does, I think 1,000 games. Like, I think it's going to take a very long practice thing. And I don't think you'll ever truly master it because of all the true possibilities that will be presented by what's across the table from you. And I think that's one of the most interesting things about Puzzling Trinket. And it's honestly probably top of the list for decks I want to really invest time into after Vegas.
It's also really, it's a great way to have multiple options with one card. I feel like in Alliance, one of the things I'm looking for is if I can use a card in 3 or 4 different ways every time it's in my hand, whether that's, you know, you have autoencoder. If you discard the card, you're archiving a card. So like the ways where a single card has multiple different ways to use it, the Puzzling Trinket gives you that in droves.
Mm-hmm, 100%. So moving right along to the next one, I'm going to go into Sanctum. And the combo I'm going to talk about is Zephon. For those of you who don't know, Zephon is Zephon the Opulent. It's 2-power creature that says Zephon the Opulent cannot be used unless there are 2 or more friendly token creatures in play. It says play, make 2 token creatures after reap, gain 2. This is going with Halo of Enlightenment for me.
Yes.
If you have the card Halo of Enlightenment, it is an upgrade that reads, this creature cannot be attacked while its controller controls a token creature. And it says play, make a token creature. So if you throw that on to basically, there's a lot of ways you can do this. You can throw it on the token creature. You can throw on Zephon, and then you get some way to taunt as well. You can essentially lock out that creature from being touched by attack, only direct damage. And Zephon is definitely a threat once on the board. So I really like the way that can all come together. And there's a lot of taunt in this. You can go Ostentatious Mount, which gives a creature taunt, and then there's a ton of creatures you could have set up ahead of time before doing this. So I think it's a really great way of getting a powerhouse on the board that has to be answered.
Absolutely. That sounds fantastic. And that isn't something that I think I would have seen if I just saw it on the Archon card.
Yeah, and it's literally because I have a deck with it and I've done it a few times.
That's exactly how I got my Sanctum combo too. So I recently cracked a deck that has two actions in it, Squire Recruitment and Martyr's End. And let me read Martyr's End first. It says, destroy any number of friendly creatures. Gain one amber for each creature destroyed this way. And Squire Recruitment says, make a token creature for each friendly knight creature. So I've been able to play out some Sanctum creatures. They all happen to be knights. And then if you have a token that's a knight, that's a bonus on top of that. You play Squire Recruitment, you're making even more tokens. And then Martyr's End, you are killing the ones that you want to maybe recycle back into your deck. And you're getting all that amber from there. And what's crazy is this deck also has a handful of other ways, like this card, these two cards are complemented by things like Membership Drive, make a token creature, gain an amber for each friendly token creature. So there's lots of different things that can fit into this combo, but these two cards together specifically, it allows you to create a lot of Sanctum creatures on the board. And especially with all of the things that Sanctum can do with capturing and taunting to protect your other creatures. Like it's a great board presence and it's just two action cards.
100%. I think Sanctum is the most underrated house in Winds of Exchange, I'll have to say.
I will fight you on that one. I'm totally on the Saurian board for this one. I think Saurian is so underrated.
I think they both are, to be honest. I think people wrote them off as the worst, and I don't think they're at the bottom. I think they are house dependent, but I think they're both extremely great and they do their own thing as an E2 very well. So speaking of dinos, let's go into the dinos because we haven't talked about them yet. This one is I think these are a little bit more obvious. I think everyone knows we're gonna go right here, most likely. But for me is Epic Poem with any number of things. There's Inspiring Oration, Praetor Marius. There's and then if you want to go into those even further, there's Patronage, which then move half the ember from a creature to your pool and then move the remaining to your opponent's pool. With Praetor Marius, it's after reap for each exhausted creature to Praetor Marius is left, capture one ember. So I mean, depending on how you choose to do this, you could go into a way where you have Inspiring Oration, put the token creatures to the left, so you have more to capture when you reap. There's so many different ways you can abuse this in such a fun way. And then just having Epic Poem, so then you get a whole bunch of ember back. I think it's crazy bursty.
Totally. And if you add like Faust or Pompatus or Brachus to that, like you're making the amber on creatures either not be as much of a detriment or actually a benefit to you. Mm-hmm. So along those same lines, like the card that I want to focus on right here, it fits into that exact same category that you were talking about, but it's a card that I originally thought was very bad. I actually really didn't like Longasaur Lector, which says play after reap. You may exalt Longasaur Lector if you do make a token creature. I honestly thought that this was like a way to just give my opponent amber, because if the creature was in Saurian, I wasn't even going to be able to get a use out of that creature this turn. But if I had a Legionary Trainer, maybe I could. But I was able to get a set of cards together that got me a Scholar token. And Scholar says, redraw a card. And so no matter how much amber I am putting onto my Legosaurus Lector, I can play it and get a Scholar that I can draw with that turn if I have Legionary Trainer. Or if they're already on the board, I can reap with it. And because Legosaurus Lector is 6 power, it's harder than I originally thought for my opponent to get off the board, especially if I have one or two of them out there with maybe my Sanctum supporting them with taunt or other benefits. Like it was a card that I originally hated, that now that I've paired it with other things that work really well with amber being on creatures, or like I said, Scholar, it's become a good card for me.
I would agree. I think Scholar is better than Prospector, actually. And I think as a whole, people will realize that over time. As soon as you pair with Legionary Trainer, you're getting Ember and draw.
Exactly.
And you have the use of the card again, where Prospector is a one-time thing. It creates a threat, but I don't think... I think it's so obvious that people drew to it, but I think Scholar has a higher level of skill and play and usage overall that makes it a better token than Prospector for doing a similar aspect.
Totally. Absolutely.
All right. Moving right along, let's go into Star Alliance. This is honestly a fairly obvious one, I think, but me being the Star Alliance fan that I am and a lover of this archetype of deck, I was so happy to see this. So first off, Dark Harbinger is one of my favorite cards in the game. I love Dark Harbinger decks in Mass Mutation. So to have Transport or Platform, which we all know is an artifact that has action, return a friendly creature and each upgrade attached to it to their owner's hand, paired with the great new creature Collector Borin, which is a 3-power creature that says play, put an upgrade from your discard pile onto your hand, then after an upgrade is attached to Collector Borin, ready Collector Borin. That's basically Transport or Platform combo decks on steroids, essentially. So I love that. So you can basically play the upgrades, get the Ember on those, reap with it, and then Transport a Platform back, do it all over again. It's just such a fantastic thing that you can do. I'm a huge fan of this combo in Star Alliance.
Absolutely. I think that there's so many things in Star Alliance that are fantastic support. I haven't really been able to like... The ways that I've narrowed down the combinations within Star Alliance that have worked well for me has also been to utilize them. And I think that most of what I see in Star Alliance are very good in getting you more cards or in getting another house to do its thing, but not really to like have a game plan. So one of the combos that I've actually found with a game plan here is General Order 24 is in fact in this set, but another chase card, FOF Transponder, is an upgrade. And FOF Transponder reads, this creature gains, destroyed, make a token creature, attach FOF Transponder to that creature. And General Order 24, token creatures get around General Order 24 because they're put into play. So if you can have a General Order 24 out, and a creature with an FOF transponder, and you keep picking that creature, that token, that house is going to go away, but a creature from that house will always be on the board. So it'll take until your opponent's board is wiped to actually get rid of General Order 24, obviously if they don't have artifact control. And I've seen the most success with this. I have attempted to put together, and it's janky right now, but not gonna lie, super fun, an Alliance deck that has 4 houses in it. It has a Prospector token, but because it has General Order 24 and FOF Transponder, if I'm able to get those things out, what I'm doing is I'm calling Equidon for the General Order 24, killing a Prospector, drawing a card, but FOF Transponder is creating another Prospector. So I'm never calling Equidon to actually use the house. I have my other 3 houses. My game plan of the cards themselves are going the way that they're supposed to be going, and I've actually attempted to add him to Duma to this so I can destroy the Prospector that has the FOF Transponder attached to it and just continually draw cards. It's a lot of fun. It's really jank. But that is a combo that I've seen work within Star Alliance.
That's super cool. I like that one. All right, we got 2 houses left to cover, Unfathomable and Brobnar. Why don't you continue on to Unfathomable? Because I know you probably have a juicy one. And then let's go into Brobnar. Because I know that's what we've been intentionally saving that. Let's be honest.
So for Unfathomable, I have just been so enamored with the artifact offering to Killagog. It's not something that you think about when you first think of Unfathomable, because there are so many good control cards in Unfathomable. You're thinking Befuddle, Abyssal Sight, all of those things, but offering to Killagog is really a way for Unfathomable to shine in a different direction. And it reads, Omni, destroy a friendly creature. If you do, choose a creature in your discard pile, place it face down under Offering to Killagog, and then another Omni, put each creature under Offering to Killagog into play face down as a token creature. And I think the reason that this shines so brightly is because there are so many creatures in Unfathomable that have destroyed triggers. And there's not that many in other houses. So if you have Kamalani, where you make 2 token creatures, or Soul Left and Flounder Right, where you're actually killing the opponent's other flank creature, like... These combo so well together, because also one thing that works well with Offering to Killagog is you do not need to put the creature that you have destroyed underneath Offering to Killagog. You are putting any creature from your discard pile under Offering to Killagog. So you can get rid of those creatures that have absolutely no effect on play, or let's say the creatures in other houses, so you can whittle your your deck down to less of that house. It's a really great way to make it a combination card that works really well within the house.
Yeah, I love it. It's I think might be my favorite card.
Really?
In the Unfathomable House. Yeah, I just think it has a lot of potential for different things and utilization of different tokens. Like mm-hmm. you have a fish token, for example, you're dealing 2 damage to the most powerful enemy creature when you destroy it. So that alone, I think, adds a lot of value. So yeah, I'm a big fan of that as well. I think it's really great. All right, let's move on to the grand finale, which is going to be Brobnar. Well, where do we start here? I feel like there's so many here. I know one that you're going to probably want to say, so I'm not going to say it, even though we never discussed this. I know this is coming. But for me, the one I have that is maybe less known is I like Creechy with Fresh Marks.
Ooh.
So you're putting 6 Ember on your opponent's creatures. So Creechy says, each time a player exalts a creature or a creature captures one, put 1 Ember on that creature from the common supply.
Nice.
And then Fresh Marks states that destroy a friendly creature if you do exalt 3 enemy creatures. So you're essentially putting 6 Ember across from you, plus you're gaining 1. So that's a 7 Ember swing. And if you have a way of getting rid of Creechy that turn so it can't be used against you, or you don't really have capture or anything, all the power to you. But I think that's a really strong combination there.
That's fantastic. So I know I've mentioned before Feats of Strength and Endless Hordes, so it's not really like, it's not new, but one of the ones I've been really enjoying recently is there is a card, an action card. This is probably not the one you were thinking of. There's an action card in Brobnar that enhances damage pips, and that is Vow of Blood. And I don't have it in front of me, but it says play do two damage to all damaged enemy creatures. And I know that off the top of my head because I've been playing it a lot recently, and I've been playing it with another Brobnar creature, Hebe the Huge. And that is, upon play, do 2 damage to all undamaged creatures. So if your creatures on your side of the board can survive 2 damage each, you are basically, with those two together, doing at least four damage to your opponent's creatures, because the enhancements from Vow of Blood have been given to other cards in your deck. So you also have damage pips that you're doing. So it's a semi-small, like, board wipe or board damage to 4 or less power creatures. And it also, like, puts creatures on the board. If you have Vow of Blood in your deck, you're putting damage pips into your deck. So it's a great way to support a huge Brobnar creature heavy house.
I love it. That's amazing. Okay, and then my last one is going to just be Endless Hordes with take your pick of cards in Brobnar. I mean, you got Brick Nasty. You can go with Overrun. So Brick Nasty allows you to get Ember when your Brobnar creatures fight. So if you got a great Brobnar token, you're laughing. Overrun, if 3 or more enemy creatures have been destroyed this turn, your opponent loses 2. Feels like this card in Worlds Collide never went off. I feel like it's way more viable here. So I'm just going to end with that one. It's a good one.
Can I note, like, Endless Hordes, if you haven't tried Endless Hordes with actually the Bellatorin, I know everyone's like, Berserker, Berserker, but like, if you can get an Endless Hordes Bellatorin from Saurian out there, it's insane. It's like the most powerful creature with the most armor. Like, you're not going to defeat that creature. And if you are filling your board with that, good luck to your opponent.
Oh, interesting. I like it. That's cool. And of course, we can't end an episode without our titular segment. We call that
Help from Future Self.
This week, I have one for you. So for those of you who play on TCO, I noticed there's a big difference between TCO and online. The ease to click and go fast. This has definitely been said before, but it feels so relevant to me right now. When you have really high sequence decks, I think the ability to just click and do things and not think clearly is very, very relevant. So
absolutely.
I just want to say, take your time, slow down when playing TCO, especially when you're testing something over and over again. It feels very automatic to start clicking for things and not really thinking through the full potential of what you could do. So sometimes slow your roll, take a second to not go on autopilot, be more thoughtful in your play choices and your clicking more specifically, so you can actually optimize your plays.
Totally.
The only upside to this is I think it does do an interesting training exercise where when you play in person, you're less likely to make the mistakes as easily. So you're almost training yourself the mistakes you could make and learning from them. So when you're in a more realistic IRL situation, you can be the most optimized. So learn from the mistakes of how speed can kill, and then also understand that you can learn, get better, become more proficient as a result. But slow down on TCO, create it more like a real life experience where you would have that ability to be a little bit more thoughtful. All right, so I think that about does it for this episode. Sydney, if people wanted to reach out to you, where can they find you?
I am, as always, SC Steele on TCO and Discord.
If you folks want to get in touch with me, you can find me on Discord under Boulevard Blake. Also, be sure to tune into my YouTube. I have lots of content coming out. Was on a bit of a hiatus this past week, just catching up from being on vacation. Was able to put content out the whole time I was away, but now it's catching up with me. And I'm busy testing for Vegas. I have what I'm going to bring all sorted, and I'm really excited for this vault tour coming up. So both Sydney and I will be there. So thanks everyone. And until next time.